Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
With what Tyson Fury did to Deontay Wilder is the first time you really saw him fighting off his back foot. Yeah. And he had never been beaten that way, too. And then firing Mark Breland, his longtime cornerman, I just, you know, a lot of things are different for this camp.
Yeah. I think that was a problem, firing Mark Breland. I mean, because they were really close. And then not only did he fire him, but he badmouthed him afterwards by saying that he was working with Fury in spiking his water. So it was, I mean, Mark Breland took that very personally, as anyone would, you know?
Yeah, of course.
So I don't know. It's going to be weird this time around.
Even the press conference, he wasn't talking or anything.
Yeah, he didn't say a word, really. He just had his headphones in.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see, like, during that fight week, is he going to do any interviews, address media, or?
I'm not sure.
It'll be interesting.
We'll see.
I heard that because I'm part of Everlast now, and Wilder is a part of Team Everlast, so Everlast has to, you know, do photo shoots and whatnot. But I heard that Wilder wasn't allowing anybody to come into his camp, so he's kind of, I just heard that he locked down his camp and didn't want, you know, connections with the outside world. I don't know.
All right. Well, hey, we're rolling. Episode 77. Let's start this thing off. 1, 2, 3. Welcome back to the Schmozone podcast. This is episode number 77. I'm Dave Schmolenson, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is
Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports.
And today's guests, awesome people. I feel like we're catching you guys before the world catches you, which I'm still shocked as to how you guys are still kind of, I would say, under the radar. Yeah. Biagio Ali Walsh and Nico Ali Walsh, the grandchildren of the infamous Muhammad Ali, and obviously athletes in your own right. Thanks for joining the Schmozone today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate you guys coming on, man.
Yeah, first off,
men.
I love both of your shirts, and especially the Unfinished Legacy.
Oh my God. I saw this company on Instagram, and this guy's out of LA, and I saw the butterfly, and me and Biagio, our whole family love, like, skeletons and, you know, Halloween, that kind of thing. And his whole company is based off of butterflies and skeletons. And the name is Unfinished Legacy. So I was like, that's perfect.
Kind of coincidental,
very
right?
Fitting, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I reached out to him, and he was like, you know, your grandfather and Nelson Mandela, MLK, those kind of guys is how I thought of the company. So I was like, I need a couple shirts.
That's
so
great.
I'm definitely repping them today.
My favorite jacket is the Schmo that I wear to all my favorite combat sports events.
Is that the blue one?
It's one
right?
of them.
Okay.
But I have this purple one, and it's got
butterflies.
And
really
every time I wear that, I think of Muhammad. Yeah, I think of, like, you know, especially because I got to be in that event, in that arena, like the special ambience of it. Mm-hmm. So every time I see butterflies and I'm around combat sports, it's always my first thought.
And that's what you tell people, too, who ask you. You're like, oh, it's like.
That's exactly right. And that's why when I saw it, I'm like, you know, because I tried to wear the most loud jackets possible as that character. But
of course.
Obviously, that's not the case today, man.
Yeah.
But we were just looking. I guess we'll just start with you. You're looking at me, and we're going to get to everything, too. I'm a huge football fan, and I'm all sports fan in general. But I think it was August 25th you got announced for the second pro fight you have lined up
October
for next
23rd?
Month. Yes. October 25th it was announced.
And then
October
the 14th
23rd.
Was your pro debut.
August 14th.
August 14th.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, super exciting. You sang it's – crazy how, like, we're talking about August, it's almost the end of September, like, it's crazy, time is going by so fast. especially this year. But October 23rd, we're back in Atlanta for my second fight, and it's going to be really, really exciting, I think.
So now that some time has passed, even though it's only been, about a month, but have you had the chance yet to kind of reflect on some of those emotions? Because I'm sure there were not only, you know, a lot of pressure, but maybe expectations for yourself in the pro debut?
Yeah, I mean, it was a ton of pressure, which I was, like, kind of avoiding an interview saying, but obviously it's a ton of pressure, but it's mainly for the first fight. I would say that after you get the first fight out of the way, everything is smooth sailing. That's mm-hmm. the way I see it. That's the way that other professional fighters that I look up to, that's what they've said. Just so much pressure going into, you know, somewhere that I've never been before, especially with this whole larger than life legacy, you know, all that stuff. But I mean, we were able to handle it pretty well. Biagio was the only person, you know, in the family that wasn't nervous, I would say.
Yeah, I wasn't
nervous. aside from myself, which I thank God I wasn't nervous, but yeah. Like my parents were so nervous, you know, everyone around me was nervous except for my coaches, me and Biagio, and that's the way I want to keep it.
21 years old, pro debut, major promotion and Top Rank, where I know they have tons of footage. Legacy footage in the archives of Muhammad that no one else has, and some people haven't even seen before, especially in the public. But also, too, do you think it kind of helped you that you had this debut in kind of what I'd call this pandemic COVID era, where probably a lot less media and attention to it than there would have been if, let's say, we didn't have this pandemic going on right now?
Yeah, you know, the plan that they had for me right when I met with Bob Arum to sign with Top Rank was to start off slow, you know, a little bit. Like, I'm not going to be fighting in Madison Square Garden for my first fight. They made it a point to not do that. So I think with COVID and everything, I think the stars just aligned. Everything happened, you know, perfectly the way it did. Mm-hmm. I
and
would say.
While wearing your grandfather's trunks.
Yeah. No, and that was interesting because I wasn't supposed to wear them. And Biagio and my mom know that, you know, I've kept these trunks for so many years. I got them as a gift after my grandfather had passed away, just as like a memento. I wasn't supposed to wear them the night of the fight. I just brought them with me as like a good luck charm. But my shorts weren't ready. My Everlast shorts weren't ready. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to wear these shorts. So it was literally the night before the fight that I found out I was wearing them.
It was fate. It was meant to be.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. How it feels. That's how it feels, definitely.
A lot of coincidences happening right now. But I don't believe in coincidences, so.
You believe everything happens for a reason.
Of course, and that my whole family does. Everything does happen for a reason. Everything, yeah.
And so just to put for our audience to understand the perspective of the lineage, your mother's father is Muhammad Ali. Your aunt is Layla Ali, mm-hmm. too, who also has a excellent boxing career yourself too.
Yeah.
So it totally runs deep in your family. But, you know, with your names too, Nico and Biagio, there's obviously, probably I'm assuming on your dad's side, Italian roots as well.
Italian. Sicilian. Definitely Italian over here. Yeah.
No, my dad's family, I think it's Sicily.
Sicily, yeah. It's funny, when I went to Milan last year for COVID for some work, like some photo shoot, they all got my name right in Italy. And usually in the States, they say like Bellagio or something. They'll usually say, like, sometimes they'll get my name wrong. But in Italy, they all got it right. And I was like, yeah.
I think Biagio is like the John of, you know, the U.S.
It's
the
most common. Yeah.
It's crazy, yeah.
But in Italy. So.
Were you both born in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you moved to Las Vegas in your childhood?
Yeah. I was like six. Nico was like four, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I don't remember Chicago as a kid. He does, but, you know, I mean, all our childhood summers were spent in Chicago, you know, even when we lived out here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what got me hooked on sports is growing up in the 90s, Michael Jordan to me. You know, I look at icons in sports. I look at, like, my Mount Rushmore, the people who I look at sports. Mm-hmm. I think of Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Babe Ruth, Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. That's what I look at as icons in sports. And obviously, you got someone like Tom Brady now. Yeah. I think 5-10 years down the line. I mean, he's already the greatest football player of all time, but he's in that icon conversation. Sure. It's just a timing thing because he's still playing right now.
And I think he solidified that with the taking the Bucks to the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah.
And winning
.
I think he really sealed the deal in that.
And you're a football player, and
I used to play football. Yeah.
So Helen, when I used to work for NBC Sports locally, mm-hmm. and this was a couple years ago, around like 2016-ish, mm-hmm. and I remember the talk of the town, especially in football, was Biagio, Ollie Walsh. Like, where is he going to go to college? And I remember even at the radio station, they're like, make sure you know, go to the Gorman games and go cover it and stuff like that. So can you kind of give us, because I know you went to Berkeley.
Yeah, right, I went to Cal. Seasons. Yeah, played there for 2 seasons. And then I transferred. I used the transfer portal to come back to UNLV. And I played another season here. Mm-hmm. It was the eligibility took a long time because I was transferring. And it was like brand new. The transfer portal was like brand new, so it took some time to get eligible. But once I got eligible, I played a little bit, got some injuries going on, and then that was like my last season of football. So now I'm like trying to get into personal training and stuff like that. And
I follow your Instagram and I see you're always like working with a lot of like even pros and stuff, right?
Yeah.
He works with a lot of the MMA guys.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen that. Yeah. So how did you transition into that?
So I was talking to my old strength and conditioning coach from UNLV, who was also my old strength and conditioning coach at Gorman, Sandor Emanuel. Okay. I was talking to him, and he was working at this place called the Institute that was on Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, like, let me come in and just, shadow you for a little bit. And I started to really like it, so I started doing an internship there, and now I'm kind of like just splitting my ways and trying to find my own, separate thing.
Are you at the Institute now still?
No, I'm not there anymore. So I'm trying to get my certification for personal training.
Awesome.
But I've also been training over at Extreme Couture for like almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
So a lot of the guys that I was working with also go to Extreme Couture, so.
Of course. Yeah, awesome. It's one of the hottest gyms right now.
Yeah, it's, man, I love it. I love it there. I go there every day, and I'd love it.
They're always great to us. Yeah. We have a great relationship with Coach Eric Nixick, and I know a lot of people, like Dan Ige is there.
Yep.
I was just there at a crazy interview with Sean Strickland, but he's one of those nomad fighters that goes to all different gyms just to look to spar fresh bodies. Yep. Interesting cat there.
Yeah.
Yeah, great gym.
Excellent gym. So, athletics as a kid, though, so you went the football route. You've obviously gone the boxing route.
Right.
Was that kind of pushed on you guys, or is that something you fell into growing up?
Nico?
Boxing was never pushed on me. Obviously, we were around it. There's photos of me at 3 years old with, like, big Everlast boxing gloves on. I didn't know what I was doing at that time, but it's just been around the family. I would say athletics has always been around the family, but I tried out football I want to say for 2 days or something, and I didn't like the team aspect of it. So I went into something that I knew a little bit about, which was boxing, and then I stuck with that.
I kind of fell into football elementary school. We were just playing like a game on the field, and my PE teacher asked me, he's like, kind of fast, like, you ever play football? I'm like, no. So we both played flag football when we were young, like fifth grade, And then I stopped, tried football again, tackle for the first time, seventh grade, hated it. And I took another year off, and we were supposed to move back to Chicago, and I was gonna try football out again back in Chicago. We were thinking about going to like Marist High School in Chicago, and we ended up staying here in Vegas because my dad saw a Gorman game. He's like, oh, we gotta stay here in Vegas. Like, Gorman's like football, top tier, So we ended up staying here in Vegas.
Well, how was it on that note, like playing football for Gorman? Because I've heard like some stories. Obviously, they're the powerhouse, right?
Yeah.
But what was that atmosphere like? Because I've heard, some people say it's like really intense.
Yeah. The football aspect?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very intense, very disciplined. Very
you gotta militant, mention Gorman was the best year of Gorman was when he was
the
best, the
quarterback
team.
Again, is it the guy was Kellen Munn the quarterback at the time?
Tate Martell was.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
But their team of the four years that he was there, even the year before, no, the 4 years he was there was the best Gorman team.
It was.
Yeah. I
never lost a high school football game.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I remember. I mean, we went completely undefeated.
Crazy.
But discipline is what made us so great, you know?
You bring up Tate Martell. So before I created the Schmo, when I was working at USA Today, I would cover the Nike Elite 11 football camp, mm-hmm. which was in Redondo Beach, and he was the hottest prospect at the time. And there was a lot of good quarterbacks like Tua. I know Tua might have won that competition. That was like the first time the nation in high school kind of saw Tua's talent, and then he was recruited mm-hmm. by Saban, Alabama, and everything. Yeah. But Tate Martell, man, he would get all the attention and everything, and mm-hmm. didn't he go from like Ohio State to Miami, and now he's at UNLV again, yeah. and he's still playing? He's an interesting story.
Yeah, very interesting, you know, because before that he was, I think in eighth grade, he was committed to Washington.
Yeah.
And then decommitted in high school, committed to Texas A&M while we were playing, I think our senior year, and then decommitted and then went to Ohio, and now he went to Miami, and I think he's back at UNLV now. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting to see what's next for him, you know?
It is, too, but it's like, you know, at each stop, it's like he's been out-dueled by the quarterback yeah. at that time. You know, he didn't get the starting role, and then mm-hmm. it seemed like he left mm-hmm. to a place where he feels like he can start.
You know, honestly, with him, I wish he would have stayed Mountain West or Pac-12. You know, I feel like he'd be a better quarterback in that kind of conference. You know, that's just my opinion, though. So I feel like he would have done really good if he stayed Pac-12 or Mountain West.
And when you played at Berkeley, weren't you close, or you were texting with Marshawn Lynch, right?
Yeah. I talked to him all the time.
Do you still talk to him?
I saw him at the Institute not too long ago. Okay. And I was like, yo, like, it's been a couple of years. Like, how you been? He's like, hey, you're good. He's just shooting hoops and stuff. But, yeah, I talked to him a lot before I went to Berkeley. And I saw him a lot when I was there, too. And, man, he's hilarious. He's hilarious. He's a funny guy. He's a great guy, too.
How did you guys kind of get linked up?
So my grandmother, my step-grandma, who was married to my grandfather, she had a connection with him and someone that he knew, and she ended up getting headphones and sending them to me. And I somehow got in contact with him, and we exchanged numbers, and I just called him one day and FaceTime, we started FaceTiming. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Started talking sense.
That's awesome.
You know, Marshawn was actually the first person to text me right after my grandfather passed, like the night of.
Wow.
Like
wow.
when it was on the news, he was the first person to text me and be like, hey, like, are you okay, you know? And, you know, he didn't have to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I really respected him a lot after that.
I'll never forget, even when he was at Cal, when he took the golf cart mm-hmm. and would drive around the field.
Yep.
Skittles, the post-fight stuff. That run he did against the Saints in the playoffs, man.
That was ridiculous.
Beast mode was unreal. He was such a great talent, too. And he was drafted, I remember, to Buffalo, mm-hmm. and he didn't really take off to Buffalo. And then when he switched over to Seattle, his career spiked.
I think that run against the Saints is what really, like,
changed everything.
Blew everything up. Like, yeah. That was Beast Mode.
I love that name, Beast Mode.
Yeah.
Great branding.
Yeah.
Excellent branding. I wanted to get your opinions, though, too, on kind of the state of boxing and where we are in this whole boxing world, because it seems like where this generation is and where all the talk is, mm-hmm. obviously everybody talks about the Paul brothers. If your grandfather was still alive, where would he kind of see the state of boxing, and would he be on board with how things are kind of turning in this direction?
My opinion has changed so much on that.
Yeah.
But I would say overall, I can't speak for my grandfather. He had exhibitions of his own. You know, he fought with he had an exhibition with, I think it was a kickboxer.
Or a wrestler or something.
Or a wrestler
like that.
Or something like that. And he had also another exhibition with a football player. So exhibitions, you know, weird matchups like Floyd Mayweather versus Logan Paul is not the first time you've mm-hmm. heard of that. But I mean,
it does draw eyes, though.
It draws eyes to the sport.
You gotta give credit where credit's due, you know? Like, it's bringing a lot of eyes to the boxing world. You know, a lot of people are talking about boxing more than, you know, than I thought.
Yeah.
So you gotta respect that.
And that's not the first time I've heard that question. So, you know, just you guys talking about it, there's millions of other people talking about it.
100%. But I look at that question and I'm like, how did we get to this point? How did boxing get into a position where someone like a Jake Paul or Logan Paul, someone completely mm-hmm. No background, really. I guess they were wrestlers too in high school.
Okay.
Get into this sport and kind of are the talk a ton of the sport. Like, how did we get to this point?
I think social media has a big thing to do with that, you know, because ever since social media, you got more followers, more views, whatever, you know, and they had already had a big established base, fan base, and they just brought that over to boxing by getting into boxing, you know, and so.
You know what I think is every, I would say with boxing especially, every time there's a fight, you need to have a villain. Like, there's got to be a villain to every story. And I really feel like Floyd Mayweather was the villain for the longest time. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone was going, he was Money May. You know, he didn't want to be liked by anybody. And everyone, I feel like a majority of people wanted to see him lose to Pacquiao. A majority of people wanted to see him lose to McGregor. And he left the sport. So now there's like a new villain being, you know, the Paul brothers. So I guess it's entertaining is what is what it is, really.
So it's more for the entertainment factor and kind of bring in the eyeballs. Yeah. Not so much where it's like, for example, since for you, you've trained since you were a kid, and they were they wrestlers, both of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they wrestled, and then now newer to boxing.
Boxing now has like kind of shifted gears, whereas before it was just one lane. A boxer is a boxer is a boxer.
Yeah.
Now it's like they're never gonna fight a real boxer. They're never gonna fight, you know, the likes of Canelo. That's never gonna happen.
Even though that's on his hit list.
I know that's says that, but I mean he's never gonna fight Canelo. He's never gonna fight, you know, Logan Paul's never gonna fight Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury, you know. So that everyone stays in their own lane, and that's the way it should be.
But what about Tommy Fury? Where is he on the spectrum? And we're gonna get into it because you were in Tyson Fury's camp.
Yeah, no, that's weird because he is on. If we're talking about lanes, he's like on the divider. You know, he's right there in the middle.
Is it because he was on Love Island?
Yeah, I mean he's.
Wait, is that a show?
Yeah, he's huge over the UK. He's huge over there.
It's like the Bachelor, the equivalent of that in the UK. That's the way I understand it.
He does not look like a boxer at all. You know, like he doesn't. He takes the saying "pretty boy" to another level. He looks like a movie star, and everybody says that. He is a movie star. I mean, he's a reality TV star.
I've never seen it,
though. Well, ironically, his last opponent who was in Jake Paul's corner was Anthony Pretty Boy Taylor.
And really?
In fact, we were just with him on Saturday night because he's a Bellator fighter. Yeah. He was at the Bellator. I was just talking to him. And I think that kind of fight really kind of exposed or at least told the tale of where Tommy Fury's at.
Right.
6-0, maybe now he's 7-0 in his boxing career. Right. Like, where his skill level is, and I feel like Jake's next opponent, if we were to guess and throw, you know, put things out there,
it would be great if Tommy Fury fought Jake Paul. That's something Tyson wants. You know, it's a mixture of, you know, it just gets people talking. You know, that's a cool story, and that would be great if Jake Paul fought. You know, that would be his first time fighting someone with a record in boxing. So that would be I think entertaining to watch.
Well, what about MMA fighters getting into boxing? Like when we saw Vitor Belfort fight Evander Holyfield Silva,
Silva looks great right now.
He does.
No, Silva looks amazing. Silva looks amazing. He could definitely. There's not a lot of MMA guys who can cross over, and you could say that this guy could have made a career in boxing if he never did MMA. And I think Anderson Silva is the greatest MMA fighter of all time. He could have been just as good in boxing. Yeah, and you can't really say that about, you know, a lot of fighters.
How old is he? You
know? He's 44, 46.
Wow. If he was 15 years younger, he would be in boxing. He would be a champion.
Yeah,
for sure. I could totally see it too. Just his style, his length, and he's so cerebral. And
no, he's got fighting IQ.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And not a lot of people have that.
So I'm not sure if we caught this because we started rolling the podcast, but you were talking about being in Tyson Fury's camp even till about a month ago when everyone had to disperse because of the whole COVID scare and situation. Yeah. And we started talking about Deontay Wilder. I think Deontay Wilder's side, they even thought that was kind of a hoax as well, too.
That's really stupid. I mean, I think that is so ridiculous. I don't know if he actually believes that it was a hoax. Why would anybody lie
and
lose? Yeah. Why would anybody lose? I mean, you got to think they lost millions of dollars. You know, they lost millions of dollars, whether it be Top Rank, Bob Arum. You know, that's a payday for Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Why would you lie?
Yeah,
you know, to postpone it.
Conjoined thing. It's PBC, Fox, Top
Rank,
ESPN.
Everyone's losing money when you have to cancel a fight like that. But I can tell you it was not fake because I was there and I just barely missed getting COVID. I'm vaccinated. And I saw the people that not introduced COVID to the camp but got COVID from the camp, and they had COVID.
So walk us through what happened. Like, take us back to that time, like how everybody found out and what the scene was like since then.
Well, everything was like kept under wraps, but what I know is I was training in the gym. I go top rank gym. Right. I train with my Sugar Hill Stewart is my trainer, which is also Tyson's trainer. So Tyson would come into the gym early and then I would come into the gym right after him and I would see him before I start my workout because Sugar goes from him to me. And then he stopped coming into the gym because there was a ton of people getting into the gym with cameras or, you know, just other fighters that want to be just kind of around that atmosphere. So the gym was getting crowded. So they had to start locking down, you know, rules for the gym. And then I noticed he stopped coming in. I was like, I hope everything's okay. Then his sparring partners tested positive. And I didn't know till last minute. I was calling Sugar to make sure everything was okay with him. Last minute, they announced that Tyson was positive too.
Wow.
So, and then that ruined, obviously, the fight. They had to completely cancel it. So no one would lie about that. I think that's stupid.
Of course.
Or even in the beginning, what was it he was saying? He thought Tyson put egg weights?
Yeah, the excuses leading up to it is there's egg weights. You know, the body armor was like an extra 50 pounds or something.
In the gloves, right?
Yeah, in the gloves. Yeah.
They were saying Wilder said it was egg weights. He mentioned that his suit was a little too heavy. But I think the egg weights, he also said his water was spiked, but I think the egg weights thing is a compliment, you know, because obviously no commission allows, like, at that level, for my fight, I couldn't put in a piece of paper. I couldn't slip in a note into my glove. So, you know, at that level, they would not allow something as crazy as that.
I guess that just means he hits hard, right?
I mean, you saw the dent in the side of the temple. Yeah. But it's such baloney to me, just the whole type of tale, because the whole interaction of going in the locker room and watching someone get their hands taped and everything before fight, heck, that's what started the feud between Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul in the first place. Mm-hmm. When Ben Askren was boxing in Atlanta, where you're going to be fighting, for your next pro fight, in Atlanta and behind the scenes in the locker room where Jake Paul was getting his hands wrapped, Tyron Woodley was watching, and that's where they had a verbal spat.
I don't really agree with the other team going into their locker room. Okay. I think that kind of opens a door for a feud to happen or for something to happen because you see that a lot. That happened a lot with that happened with Mayweather Pacquiao, that happened with Mayweather Maidana, I think. That happened with Golovkin Canelo. So having another, I think it's best to have a neutral party go to each person's, you know, locker room and then watch them, because having my team go to your team is just, you know, you're trying to start something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that for sure. I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We briefly brought up Mayweather, but obviously when you drive to Las Vegas, you see the TMT signs, the Mayweather signs, you know, it's a big thing, part of his legacy is the O, you know, the 15-0, the undefeated and stuff like that. And with your grandfather, I don't think it mattered to him, you know. I mean, obviously wins and losses matter, but what mattered more to him, not that record, but the quality, the legacy of who he was fighting and what he was fighting for. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get a kind of sense, I know you guys were a lot younger and everything like that, how he kind of felt about Mayweather, because he was the guy of, you know, this generation that we've all kind of grown up in?
I remember when we were young, we told him how much Mayweather got paid in one of his fights. I forgot which fight it was, but his eyes was like,
yeah.
Because, you know, they didn't get paid like that back then in boxing. Right. So I do remember mentioning that to him.
He didn't pay a lot of attention to like the new fighters because obviously in his old age he was more concerned with like watching westerns and you know movies mm-hmm. you know at home. But I would say the biggest thing is that when I think of the greatest fighters of all time, obviously I'm biased. I put my grandfather number one, but I think of Ray Robinson and then I think of like Manny Pacquiao. When I think of these guys, I don't know how many times they lost, and each one of them lost, you know, multiple times. So I would say losing doesn't matter when you're at that level where like you're making fights where like the first time my grandfather fought Joe Frazier, that's on ESPN's list of like greatest fights of all time. He lost that fight, you know, but it was still one of the greatest fights of all time. I think that's what matters. That's the legacy that you create.
Like he fought Pacquiao, but I just wish it was sooner. Like, I still wish it was sooner.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah. We all did. 2015, they were both in their mid-30s, mid to late 30s. It was too late.
I was a little kid. I'm like, dude, fight Pacquiao. Like,
I know.
I was a little kid saying that, too.
I feel like it would have made more money if they did fight in their prime.
But that's so too. But that's what I sit here and shout on this podcast, what grinds me, because we cover so much.
Angry.
It's like, why can't the best fighters always fight the best fighters? Like, if I look at the welterweight division, I've been shouting. Crawford and Spence have been shot at, but I do love the fact. I love the fact that Crawford is fighting
Sean Porter
because now we're finally seeing that high crop quality of
PBC.
That's
here in Vegas in November.
We'll be there. Awesome. Yeah. I love seeing the high crop quality of welterweights from PBC fighting top rank because that's how it should be. But like, the best fighters have to fight the best fighters.
Unify.
I completely agree with that.
Too many belts.
Yeah.
Too many. That's a whole. Yeah. That's a whole another issue. But you know, it's like the fighters. Mayweather's one of the greats. Mayweather's one of the greats for sure. I think he's one of the greatest defensive fighters.
I might argue he's the best defensive fighter.
Yeah. Well, he might be the best.
Argue,
he might be the best
grandfather
defensive fighter
too.
But like,
I would agree on that. Too.
I would. That's where that. Argument or that's where the conversation ends there. Like I don't put Mayweather unfortunately on like my top five of all time greats just because he was so defensive. He was defensively perfect, but people don't always want to watch, you know, that. So I think of like Mayweather Pacquiao, if it were to happen sooner, it would have been way better. And people are now more concerned with just having an undefeated record.
And we're still talking about that too.
Yeah,
like we're still talking about how.
But that's what they added to the sport. Like Mayweather added that the O matters. Mm-hmm. I don't think it does. I don't think it does at all.
Why I think MMA, specifically the UFC.
I love that from MMA and the UFC.
It's centralized.
Nobody cares if you lose. If you're putting on a show, it doesn't matter.
Best fighters fight the best fighters.
Right,
no excuses. That's how it should be in combat sports. That's how you find out who's the best.
The only person that I know undefeated from MMA is Khabib.
Khabib.
The Eagle. The Eagle, man.
That's it. But, I mean, other than that, like... I respect so much that the UFC and just MMA fighters in general, when they lose, it doesn't matter because they still fight the best. And it shows that even after you lose, you can still be the best, you know?
What's interesting, though, too, with Khabib 29-0, and yes, the only undefeated one that we talk about, but he also, like, if you look at some of the all-time greats in the sport, too, they fought in multiple weight divisions. You brought up Anderson Silva. Like, he's fought at light heavyweight and at middleweight. Mm-hmm. Daniel Cormier, the champion at heavyweight and light heavyweight. Mm-hmm. You see guys going for Conor McGregor, the champ statuses, too. So it's kind of interesting to see how people perceive greatness and what the individual athletes do to chase that greatness.
Mm-hmm. I think if any fighter, whether it be boxing or MMA, if you fight the best fighters out there, you will lose at some point. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is that once you do lose, you can come back and, you know, show that you know it doesn't matter that you did lose. My grandfather lost to Joe Frazier, but he never lost to anybody more than once. Mm-hmm. You know,
he also came back and beat him too.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
But you, at this point in your career, having your second pro fight, you know, looking to go 2-0, like, don't you think the records, especially in boxing, they matter so much more, especially in these first few fights when you're starting out your career, than let's say a mixed martial arts? Like,
yeah,
there's
that's why it's different. Boxing in mixed martial arts is different from like the starting of the career. Some people go straight into the UFC with a couple of fights, even whether it be amateur MMA fights. They don't have a big record, you know. Lomachenko had almost 400 amateur fights. You'll never an MMA fighter having 400 amateur MMA fights. You know, it just doesn't happen. But right now, as, you know, a novice, I would say, starting off in boxing, record does matter. You know, but if I fought, my second fight is coming up. For my third fight, if I fought Mayweather and lost, that's, you know, what a way to lose that would be, you know. It would be, or if I fought, let's say, Canelo, you know, my third fight, that'd be an amazing loss. That wouldn't be a loss to me. That would, you know, I would gain experience from that. And that's what happened actually with Canelo and Mayweather.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Canelo's career is just soared.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
He is the face of boxing right now. Like, in terms of talent, if you're a boxing purist, who is the best pound for pound boxer in the world right now? I think of Canelo.
He's one of my favorites of all time. When I'm mentioning that five list of all time, Canelo's in my all time list of greats. That's how much, you know, I think he's just ridiculous.
And he's about to fight Caleb Plant.
Does Caleb have a chance to...
How do you see that play out?
Caleb Plant trains at City Boxing.
It's the first boxer I ever interviewed.
Really?
I love Caleb.
Yeah, no, I know his wife. And so Caleb, that is going to be such a great fight. I'm so glad that fight is happening.
Me too.
You know, because people wanted to see that.
That's going to be
unify
good.
The belts.
And Caleb Plant is not afraid of anybody.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Canelo is not afraid of anybody. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of fights, you know, that need to be made. I think it's going to be a great fight.
I do too. I think he'll fight him better than Billy Joe Saunders. I think he learned a lot.
I think he's
Billy
smarter than I think he's. I think Caleb's boxing IQ might be better than Billy Joe Saunders.
I agree with that. Agree with that too. And he's got. I mean, his nickname's Sweet Hands. He's got fast hands. Yeah. Good footwork too. This is the ultimate test for him.
Definitely.
Probably is the biggest payday of his career.
Definitely.
And well deserved. I know he's been working so hard for this moment. I just want, to see something very competitive, and I'm very happy that this is the fight.
I think
fight.
We'll see that.
I really do. Yeah, I think you will. I think you will.
Press conference too, Beverly Hilton.
Ooh, that is going to be that's going to be good.
Up.
Yeah, it I think is, that. So this will air tomorrow. So the day this airs tomorrow,
that's
it'll be going on
conference.
At the same time. Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
that'll be
awesome.
Cool. I'm
excited. I'm going to watch that. I know Caleb Plant's photographer is my photographer for some of the stuff that I shoot with Top Rank. So a lot of Team Plant people here in Las Vegas. This is where he resides, of course.
Yeah.
So I'm excited, you know, to watch that fight.
And for you, like we mentioned, so you made your pro debut in August. You're fighting again in October. For yourself and your personal goals, like, how often would you like to fight kind of in, you know, the beginning stages of your career, your pro career?
I think staying busy is so important. As an amateur, it was so hard for me to find fights. I would get them so sporadically, and that's not good. Because I stayed in shape from my first fight. You know, I didn't put on any weight really. So that's ideal. You know, they've already got my fight for December ready. Which they haven't announced yet. I don't know, even know if I'm supposed to be saying anything, but I have my fight for December already set. They want me to fight that you know, they want me to stay busy. That's what Aaron wanted, and I love that idea.
And are you still a full-time student?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Damn, at UNLV.
Same here, yeah.
And
yeah.
You're still
full-time. Got, like, two
it's
more
awful.
Semesters, yeah.
It's awful. That's it's awful.
I can't envision being a college student during this time with this all going
it's
on.
Tough,
you
man.
Guys are back on campus, or...?
Mine are online.
Online.
Mine are online,
okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I've never had to work so hard for school in my life. Last night I was up till 2 in the morning taking a test for UNLV.
Damn.
And it's just crazy. I've never had to work that hard for school.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's weird. COVID changed, like, the whole kind of, like, school system thing with the online and the Zoom and stuff and just the way assignments are due and stuff.
Oh, man.
Do you prefer that more where it's like, okay, you get to do it at home or
see,
something?
See, I
love
would.
That.
I thought I would.
Some people don't, though.
But
yeah.
I personally, like, I learn better in person.
Okay.
Like, that's just me. I thought I'd like the online because I can, you know, just chill, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I got to learn in person. That's just me,
I love online. I mean, I'm different because The way it is most of the time it's like lectures. So like he'll go to a class and it'll be an hour and 15 minutes mm-hmm. is like the normal time. And you just got to pay attention that whole time. I don't like that. I like online because it's recorded. So it's an hour and 15 minutes. You know how much time you have to watch. I'll watch 30 minutes and just pay 100% attention. And then I'll wait and then finish the rest later. Because there's no way I can pay 100% of my attention for an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, I couldn't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I can't.
I can't imagine what that's like.
No, it's not fun at all.
I did want to kind of circle back to one last thing with the whole Jake Paul situation mm-hmm. and boxing too, because I love history. I'm a historian. Mm-hmm. I look at not just like how sports from chronologically, how did we get to where we are today? I look at life that way too, but mm-hmm. my whole fear in this situation and the popularity with the rise of social media is these kids today that aren't paying attention to the history of the sport, that know everything that your grandfather mm-hmm. did and what he stood for and the people behind him, the Joe Frazier's and all that, mm-hmm. they look at Jake Paul and to them, he is their Muhammad Ali. To me, that's wild, but I've had these conversations with people generations younger than me and just being around this scene and I'm seeing this and it's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it is a new era for sure. You know, I'd like for them to do a little bit more research, you know, just to see, you know, who he was and who right. well, who might have also inspired the Pauls to bring the eyes, you know, because that's what my grandfather did and that's exactly what they're doing. So all I can say is, you know, do some research.
The way I look at like the Jake Paul situation is the Jake Paul situation is like I said, like the whole lane thing, it's like you got to stay in your lane. Anytime you try to get out of your lane, you're going to get hurt. And you know, it's happened before. So if Jake Paul, you know, you say Canelo's on his hit list, like he said that. If Jake Paul were to actually fight Canelo, I don't think they would allow that to happen. But if that were to happen, that would be devastating. You know, I know Jake Paul's a villain, but he would get seriously hurt. And that would kind of squash the whole YouTube boxing scene. But I think when kids see, you know, Jake Paul, they're like, oh, he's great. But then his last fight, he fought Tyrone Woodley. He's like stepping up, you know, the level of competition each fight. But with Tyrone Woodley, he got hurt in that fight a little bit, you know. Yeah. So I would say the kids who are watching him, they could watch Jake Paul and then Canelo. And then be like, oh, well, that's the difference, you know? Mm-hmm. So it depends who you ask, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then if you look at, like, today's boxers, too, this generation, I look at people like Devin Haney, obviously. Yeah.
Teofimo
mm-hmm. Lopez, right. yep. Ryan Garcia. Mm-hmm. And what can they do to stand out, to be that talk of this sport? Yourself included in this list as you progress, too, but, like, how can the narrative be around the people that have put their blood, sweat, and tears for decades yeah. and grew up in this be about those guys rather than these YouTubers?
I love, you know, I don't like taking away from the fighters who put, you know, their lives on the line, really, like literally. And Ryan Garcia has done a great job, I think, of he's probably the biggest up-and-coming boxer today in terms of his social
status.
Yeah, his yeah. social yeah. status, you know, his fan base. He's got a huge fan base because he was able to get out of boxing and grab fan bases from YouTube or TikTok mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever. So, and he still puts in the work, you know, so he's the kind of guy where if you want that much attention, I would never want that much attention, but if you want that, then you know, you do what he does. You work hard, you put your life on the line, and on your off time, you can, you know, grab other fan bases. He does YouTube stuff or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
the whole different audience thing just brings more eyes, you know, and they're great at doing that. So, or Ryan Garcia and the Paul brothers.
Yeah, definitely. But for you, Nico, when you first started boxing, I mean, I'm assuming you were how, like around 7?
I was like 10. 10? My first time in a ring, yeah.
Okay, what was your grandpa's reaction, you know, when he found out, like, this is what you want to do and pursue?
Well, the first time I ever stepped in the ring, It was for a children's cancer exhibition. It was just, you know, messing around. Like I was wearing my gym Vans. I was wearing just shoes, and it was just with no training whatsoever. They just wanted me to go in, and I was in, and they yelled for me to do the Ali shuffle, and then I did the shuffle, and my shoes fell off, and it was just fun, and that was my first experience in boxing. I didn't take it serious until 14. And then that's when my grandfather, that's when I told him about that and would ask him a bunch of questions about it. And yeah, I would say since then, that's when I started taking it seriously. That's when I started my amateur career, like officially.
And what was the best advice he's given you?
I would say he believed that what makes a fighter is them moving and dancing, which he believed that what makes a fighter is an interesting fighter. You know, he could have told me an undefeated fighter. He could have told me, you know, a highly skilled fighter, but he didn't say that. He said like interesting, you know? So, and that's what matters. And I've always thought about that. So that's what I strive to be, is an interesting fighter.
And I must say, I love both of your dynamics. Because I love, like, you guys are, 2 years apart? Because I have an older sister, and she's, like, about 2.5 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And we grew up playing sports together. Like, we swam on the same swim team and stuff. And I just love how supportive you are of one another. Like,
Well, I think it's because we grew up within, you know, the same our family loves world. Family. Yeah. But we're like really close in age, like a year and a half to 2 years apart.
Yeah.
It's perfect. If he was 5 years older, then, you know, he would be off somewhere else right now.
Will you be his strength and conditioning coach as he progresses?
That would be really interesting.
I'm working on it. Yeah, I've definitely thought about that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. First, I want to get my, you know, my certifications and everything, because to get my CSCS, I got to have a bachelor's. So I've got to finish school first, and then, you know, we'll see from there. You know, I'm just enjoying the journey, enjoying life.
That's excellent, man. On the importance, though, of kind of the social media, and especially in combat sports, what I've noticed, too, it's so much different than the team sports, like football, the NFL. Yeah. You have, like, a whole PR staff kind of helping control the narrative. You have the NFL Films, the NFL Network, the NBA, the NBA Network, and so on. But in this sport, you know, you're only as good as your next fight. It's a very individual sport.
Right.
And the UFC, like from a media standpoint in all of combat sports, they're really good at building stars.
Yeah.
But some of the organizations out there too, I mean, I get it, it's not their responsibility, but it puts a lot of pressure on someone like yourself to build an audience outside of what you do inside the ring.
I would say that I'm in a unique situation where I'm not worried about, you know, building my audience, because obviously I wouldn't be in the position I'm in right now if it weren't for my grandfather. So the fans of my grandfather, I've gotten so much love and support from just my one fight. They're becoming fans of me. So I'm unique in that case, where I don't have to have, like, I don't have to be, you know, crazy and do wild things, you know, to get attention and, you know, to get people to buy tickets. People will buy tickets if they love my grandfather. And, you know, if I continue to prosper in boxing, they'll buy tickets not only because they love my grandfather, but because they want to see me fight, you know?
Well, do you ever feel that you get pressure thinking, you know, like you said, the fans who love your grandfather will follow you, or that they would have that same expectations from you? Even though you guys obviously are completely different.
We're completely different, yeah. And I knew when I first went into boxing, I didn't really know my grandfather was as, you know, notable as he is. I didn't think it would be a big deal. I just loved boxing. But, you know, I don't think it's a lot of pressure for his true fans. My grandfather's true fans would be fans of mine if I lost my next 10 fights. So that's what I think about, and I really do think that's true.
So tell me what the ultimate end goal is, and does it involve kind of separating and building a legacy for yourself?
Yeah, no, it's all about, you know, I'm continuing my grandfather's legacy. I love that. But ultimately, I want to create my own path. And I think that's what I'm going to do. I mean, you know, because I just stay true to myself, and you know, I'm similar to my grandfather in a lot of ways, as many people are similar to, you know, their family members, but I'm so much different. Everyone's unique in their own way. And I think that's good. You know, nobody can be, you know, nobody could be Biagio. Nobody could be me. Nobody could be you guys. And that's perfect, because everyone's got their own fingerprint. Everyone's, you know, unique. And people want to see unique.
I love the tattoo on your forearm. I don't know why. I'm just noticing it now. But your grandfather and the butterfly there. Like,
thank you.
And
yeah.
You have the butterfly and a bee.
The butterfly and the bee right here.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I got this right before I went to college. So senior year of high school.
That's awesome. Yeah.
No, I mean, I was never going to get tattoos, but, you know, I had to.
That's
ended up getting
a great portrait. Like, they Thank did you. An incredible Thank job. You.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I got it done here in town by Robert Foe. It's weird because I was in high school when I got the portrait, and I was in a camera class. I was in a photography class, and after I got the tattoo, my photography teacher revealed to me that he used to shoot for my grandfather. I was like, that's awesome. He said, wait, let me see that photo. It was his photo.
No way.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, lift that up so the camera could.
That's crazy.
This one right here. That's amazing.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah. It is. I mean, the chances of that are ridiculous.
But
I mean,
like you guys said, everything happens for a reason, right?
Fate. Yeah, right? It's fate. Everything
That's
lines
amazing.
Up.
And every time you stick that right hand, you know, that vision is going to come into your opponents too. Yeah.
It's crazy. That photo teacher shot a little bit for my grandfather, and now he's my photographer as well. He shot for my first fight. He was there, so that was a little part of history that I also just loved.
So how did you guys, you know, we kind of started off talking about it too, you know, believing in everything happens for a reason, connecting the dots. Like, what are these specific moments that have happened so far through the journey for you guys to kind of have this kind of way of thinking? Because we think similar to that too with our respective journeys. But with you guys, I mean, that's very unique.
I feel like it's always small things, you know, the whole unfinished legacy with the T-shirt. The fact that our old photography teacher shot that photo and he got a tattoo of it. His first fight was our uncle who had passed away. Well, my dad's best friend who we called our uncle had passed away. That was his birthday, his first fight.
Small
things like that that I feel like
small stuff.
But
yeah,
it happens for a reason.
Did that all start happening like since you were a kid? You realized like, oh wow, like what a coincidence.
You know what? I would say it happens to everyone. I would in my family, my mom, my grandfather, obviously are very spiritual, huge on religion and stuff. So I would say you just have to notice it.
Yeah.
I think it happens to everyone, but nobody
didn't.
Really
I feel like I didn't
up.
Start noticing until. Maybe like a couple years ago. Yeah, just seeing like cool things like that.
Just
like,
weird coincidences, you know. And after a coincidence happens, you know, more than one time, two times, three times, then it's like, it's not a coincidence, I would say.
And
it's,
I feel,
you know,
like that happens in everybody's life. You just gotta like start seeing
notice.
It, you know. You just start noticing, and once you start noticing, you're like, oh, okay, like,
right,
happens to everybody.
It's a sign of maturation and knowing you're on the right path.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? You see signs, knowing that you're on the going the wrong way too.
Yep.
Yes.
And those are important too.
So for college, what's your major now? Because you mentioned your photography teacher. So are you more into like?
I love film. Yeah. I love film. One day I'm going to be definitely going into film. That's also been another passion of mine. But I'm majoring in business entrepreneurship, which is just, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, entrepreneur.
That's key though. But like, I think from what you just said, majoring in business and entrepreneurship, a passion for film, and doing what you do.
And I'm majoring in film too. So like, he's got the business side. I got the film insight. You know,
your lives are a movie, and you guys can document that.
No,
it really is.
And it's,
I would love that.
It's fun. I mean, you can mix everything. My biggest passions in my life have been film and boxing for, you know, as long as I can remember. So you can put that together and you can make something happen.
And I love that you guys are pursuing your passion, because we've talked about it before where we feel so many people are kind of afraid to pursue.
But where I'm also though afraid is everyone, these children growing up now too, they see success on TikTok and YouTubers and like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an influencer. I want to be this. And it's like, there is so much hard work that goes into whatever you do, and you cannot lose authenticity and to being true to who you are. You can't sacrifice.
That's a big thing.
It's a huge thing, and I feel like there's a huge disconnect just from, you know, I try my best to talk to as many young people as possible because the only way I can cater to the audience that I'm looking for is to kind of get a sense of understanding for what they want. And I'm just so fearful of the direction of where we go into today, and that's why I brought up the history and the YouTube boxing and everything, too. I don't want the important lessons that brought us to where we are today to be lost so history repeats itself and we make the same mistakes.
No, I think about that, too, man. I hope hope we are going in the right direction. We don't know, but we'll see.
I think the biggest thing is I've noticed just within the last couple of years is staying true to your yourself.
Yeah.
For every individual person, it's important because you see people who look up to, let's say, Conor McGregor, and then they start trying to be like him, and nobody likes that. Nobody likes someone trying to be like someone else. You can look up to someone and, you know, try to take things, but like when you have to go out of your own character to try and be like someone else, no, that never works out. So I would say Conor McGregor is, you know, unique, you know, like to say the least. You look at him, he's unique. You look at, you know, just influencers in general, you know, like Ryan Garcia is super unique, you know, and it's these people that are unique that people want to see, you know. So I would never, for the kids who want to grow up to be influencers, I would never want them to want to be somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
You can be an influencer, but be yourself as an influencer, you know.
You take inspirations from other people, like Sean O'Malley.
Right.
He didn't try to be Conor McGregor.
No, and he's his own person.
He's his own person.
His influence. He's completely his own person.
And
I love that. I love Sean O'Malley.
Yeah,
me too.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's great. We had him on our podcast than his before the fight week of his last fight against Chris Martino.
That's awesome, man.
I think he was tied. I don't know if I thought I saw something today where he might be fighting Brian Keller next.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I was going to text you that this morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was at the gym.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I don't know who's going to smoke more weed before that fight.
Yeah, I'm going to have to
that'll be interesting
look
to see.
That up after.
Yeah, but it's, you know.
I'd like to meet Sean one day.
Oh,
he seems like such a cool guy.
I'm sure you guys will meet.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, he's a really chill dude.
Yeah.
He's really cool.
That's dope.
Just to reiterate your point, too, and I say this all the time, if you're not first, be different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can't be afraid.
Yep.
You can't
and
be
it's
afraid.
So, I mean, people say that it's so hard to be different nowadays. It's really not. If you are yourself, completely yourself, then you're different.
That is
because
different.
There's no
That's
way
true.
You can replicate.
Yeah.
There's no way.
And that holds so much weight coming from you guys under the shadow that was casted above you guys that you had no choice. You were born into.
Of course. Yeah, no, I mean, I was, you know, I've never not been the grandson of, you know, whoever, but all I can do, all we can do is, you know, be ourselves.
It's crazy.
You know?
Growing up, it was always a secret. Like, we never told anybody, like, who our grandfather was, because we didn't think people would believe us or anything like that, or we're not the type that tells you, you know, like, oh, my grandpa's famous, you know? It was, like, my freshman year when I played football, Max Preps had picked it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how they even found that out. Like, I have no idea how they found that out.
Right.
And everybody just started knowing that I was the grandson of Muhammad Ali, and kind of just the rest is history.
So that probably your freshman year, then probably you were seventh grade around that time, eighth grade around that time.
His freshman year, I was
eighth grade. Eighth grade, yeah.
So that's kind of when that narrative kind of started taking its place in the public eye.
Yeah, I still have no idea how like Max Preps found that out.
In the public
eye. It was probably
a
friend that told a friend or something.
No,
like,
people always find out, even on lower levels, you know, being in school, being at UNLV, people find out. Being in high school, or being not in high school, in middle school, people would find out on small little levels, you know. One person says one thing and it spreads.
It spreads fast.
You're going to have a target on your back for every single opponent, too.
I know.
You're going to get their best fight every single time.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. And that's interesting because, you know, I'll be fighting the best version of each person that I fight. That'll be fun.
That adds to your legacy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, Biagio, what are your goals and your plans? Because like you mentioned, you're also studying film as well.
Yeah,
like,
so I'm studying film right now. I would like to do something with film after. I'm not so sure yet, but I wish I would have done something like kinesiology or something like that. That way I like know a little bit more about, you know, the human body and the science behind working out and and movement and stuff. So I wish I would have done something like that, but I'm going to finish out my bachelor's with film because luckily you don't need a specific degree if you want to get your CSCS for strength and conditioning. So you just need a degree or a bachelor's degree. So I'm just going to finish film out, you know, see where that goes. I could have that in my back pocket whenever I need it, you know?
Yeah, I just think you two together, I think movie, you know, I think in big picture.
It's definitely going to be a horror movie, too.
I want to make it.
We're big horror movie guys.
Fans, yeah.
Favorite horror movie?
The Shining for me.
That or Halloween, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Halloween is probably the greatest horror movie of all time.
Jack Nicholson killed it, man.
He did. Would you consider Silence of the Lambs a horror movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I would say that's a thriller.
That's like a psychological thriller. Psychological thriller.
But
horror,
I think the greatest horror movie of all time is just Halloween because that kind of set the tone for every other movie. And when you hear Michael Myers, when you hear the name, when you hear the song, the sound, it's like the first thing you think is Halloween. Not the movie, but, you know, Halloween.
That's the one character I really didn't like that much when I was little, because he just stands there, and it made me very uncomfortable when I was like in first grade, just seeing the man just stand there and look at you.
I was exposed. My best friend growing up, like, he had an older sister, so at 3-4 years old, we saw all the It movies.
Speaking of Halloween, right?
Yeah, was timing.
Who's flickering the lights?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I really liked Hellraiser.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit. It. I would have the
Pennywise.
Pennywise. He loves that. I love it. The red balloon.
No, I love. Yep. That's one of my. That's. I think that is my favorite horror character, I would say.
Mine's definitely Chucky.
I was always watching
Child's Play when I was like 2, and my aunt was babysitting me, and my mom. He was like just born.
Yeah.
And I was watching Child's Play when I was like 2 years old. My aunt was watching me. My mom came and she's like, What are you having him watch? And big fan of Chucky.
On my to-do list for interviews is the Schmo character. It's it's John Gruden. And I feel like I'll kind of reveal this to you. I need to whip out a Chucky doll and put him side by side.
That would be great.
I have to do that because he's Chucky. That's
wow. Yeah, that would be awesome.
He's funny.
You know? He's great.
If you watch the movie, he's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Hey, knock on wood if you're with me. I love that, too. We really appreciate having you guys on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Is there anything you want to plug, let the world know? You got a fight coming up next month. Floor's yours.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of my fight, you can just follow my Instagram at Nico Ali Walsh, NicoAliWalsh, and that's pretty much it. I update whatever I can from there.
I'm just grateful to be here and excited to see where everything's going.
For sure.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much.
Of course. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, we look forward to following along both of your journey.
Thanks again 100%. For having us.
Of course. Episode 77 of the Schmo Zone podcast. We are out.